Contraption back here. I gotta work. Okay. So when we've looked at this idea of the experiment, I was thinking about it this week and trying to prepare for this. Today what we're doing, for those of you that are not aware, is we're taking a little bit of time because we have our annual meeting this evening. And instead of taking the time to talk then, I'm going to do it this morning. So today what we're doing is just, I guess it used to be called the State of the Church, Congregational Meeting. Whatever you want to call it is great with me. It doesn't really bother me. What I think we're doing here, what is important to me, is that we take some time to look back at who we are and what we're doing and where we want to, where some steps that we want to take to move forward. So that's what we're doing today. And as I looked at this idea and thought about this little phrase that was given to this, the experiment, I realized that the experiment really didn't begin 9 months ago. The experiment that we've been doing here began 20 years ago. And even beyond that, quite honestly, it began, you know, the foundation and principles for it were established over 2,000 years ago. And then they were known by God and by Him before eternity began. And so the principles that we're going to be talking about today that I think are foundational and distinctive about Manchac Bible Fellowship are an experiment that goes a long way back. Now, this phase of the experiment has been going on for about 9 months. And so that's kind of what we're looking about. So I'll try to refer to it as that. Today, what I wanted to look at was a couple of things. First of all, who we are. I want to take a little bit of time to look at that and review some of the main areas of focus that we have. I want to look at where we are. When I say who we are, who we're becoming too, because we need to see where we're at, but we all need to see who we are becoming, where we are, and then look at some steps to get to that point. So let's just start right off and look at this. And I just wanted to start off with this this general picture before we worked into the review. And some of the review today is going to be very familiar to you, and that's important. It's important for us to review and look at those things. But to start off with here, I'll look at these two things of who we are and who we are to become. And here's just one place where it talks about it. In 1 Peter 2, he says, "You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, His own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, who once were not a people but are now the people of God, who had obtained mercy but now who have not obtained mercy but now have obtained mercy." And that's who we are. That's how God sees us. But He wants us to become even more than that. He says, Peter goes on to say, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." So that's who we're becoming, and that's the essence of what we're trying to achieve here in our lives, in each of our lives, individually, and to help each other do that. And you'll hear me say that a number of times today, because that's why we're here. So, the three things that I want to focus on today and look at are the areas of focus at Manchac Bible Fellowship. And 20 years ago, we started this little experiment here. And these are the three things that were set out over time. They weren't all thrown at one time, but they were set out over time. The first was making disciples, Bible teaching, and then the body concept. And these are three areas of focus that are essential for us to keep in the forefront of our minds and to keep looking at as we see where we are and where we need to go. Now, as these were presented, they really weren't presented in that order. The first one that was presented was Bible teaching. But the Bible teaching was done so that we could see the need and the necessity for the idea of making disciples. We're going to start off today by just reviewing this idea of making disciples, because this is in our purpose statement. And so we wanted to look at this idea, and then I'm going to take a little bit of a detour right off the bat but it'll be talking about making disciples. But Matthew 28 is where we look at our purpose. It says, "And Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, 'All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe the things that I have commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age.'" And when we look at this idea of making disciples, there's a lot that goes into it. Today is not my intention to make a full study of it. It's just to review some of the things that we've looked at before so that we can grab hold of those again. But the first aspect of making a disciple is introducing that person to this new life that God has made available to us. And that person can believe and receive the gift that God's given us by His Son's death on the cross to pay for our sin and restore that relationship that we have with God. And certainly that's vital. We need to know that. We need to be presenting that to people, and that needs to be a part of what we do. But even more so is the focus on this area here, that in this passage where Jesus says this, He also talks about it in Luke when He gives this command, and He gives the direction of where it needs to go. And here He talks about the means by how we're to get there and the initial purpose here. And the second part is this idea in verse 20 of teaching others to observe all the things that I've commanded you. And that's where we focus on that. This idea is, we look at this word observe. And when we see this word observe, it seems to be simple at the outset, but it's more than just a ritualistic compliance to rules or commands. It involves a lot more than that. And we see that in the definition, in the idea with it. The first part of the definition, we see these other words that are used to try to describe it. We need to keep these things. We need to pay attention to these things. And then it kind of makes a change and gives us a picture here of what He's talking about. We need to watchfully perform these things, to protect them, to guard them, to preserve them, and to realize that we have custody of these things and that they're under our administration. And it's important for us to realize these commands that God has given us and these instructions that He's given us from His Word. They need to come to a point, and the idea that He's trying to give here by using this and in other passages of Scripture is that these truths are to be so valuable that they become personal and in the essence of our lives. And that's the essence that we want to look at here. Now, a few weeks ago, I was in a discussion with a person that I consider to be a very wise person, and we were discussing the aspect of church today and where churches are in general, not just our church or that person's church, but just kind of where they are. And part of it was discussing this idea of what should be the essentials of the church. This wise person, I consider him to be wise, is my father. And so, and if you've met my father, I think he's a pretty wise guy. Wise guy? He's a pretty wise person. We've had to clip some things out from the recording, so we're going to have to clip that out. All right. Now, he said, as we were discussing this, and you've probably heard this before, but his simplified version of where the focus needs to be was to love God and love others. And I didn't say anything there with that, and because it was my father. And first of all, I don't argue with my father. And it's not because he's scary. He's not scary at all. I mean, if you've met him and know him, he's a pushover. But there's just, for some reason, I didn't argue with him. I chose to argue with my mother growing up. And so I don't know why, so I just don't argue with my dad. Now, I don't really argue with him on that point. I think that's a very valid point. I mean, we look and we see what Jesus said about this and what's said in Scripture. He says, when he was talking with one of the groups of rulers, the Pharisees or the Sadducees or someone, and they were questioning him, he said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." In the same place in Mark, he says, "There is no other commandment greater than these." Paul in Romans says, "These sum up the whole law." So, you know, I'm not going to necessarily argue with him on that point. But the question is, after that, is how do we demonstrate that love? It's easy to say some of those things sometimes. We talk about this in Sunday school. It's easy to use church words. But what does it really mean? whenever we're walking those things, you know, how do we walk those things out? How do those become a reality to us? And so, since it's Valentine's Day, and we've got this word love here, love your love, then I thought I would just take a little detour. Instead of using the word making disciples, let's go and see what he talked about there in making disciples, and look at what he talks about. How do we love God? And we'll see that it very much applies to what we're talking about when we talk about making disciples and the process of that. So we're going to skip over to 1 John real quick, and we're going to do just a little loop of love over here, okay? Loop of love to look at this idea of making disciples. 1 John 5 says, "By this we know that we love the children of God, or we love one another, when we love God and keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not burdensome, for whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is our victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God?" Now, as we go through this, I'll try to bring some of these up, but just to try to get your mind thinking that way, Eric's been covering faith over the last couple of weeks. So keep those things in mind, because we've already seen that come up here, and we'll see it come up again, this idea of faith, and especially the aspect of conclusions, that some of the conclusions that were drawn last week, when we see faith is based on some information that we've been given, commands, instructions that we've been given, and that our faith is expressed by obedience, and it has action. So those are a couple of the conclusions that were drawn last week, and we see that expression here in these passages too. So try to bring those back to your mind. Now, John likes to talk about love, and most of you have studied that and know that that's a favorite word of his. And so we're going to skip back over to the Gospel of John. We're going to look at and skip through this dialogue that Jesus gave his disciples right before his death, and some final instructions that he was giving him, and looking at this aspect of how do we love God and how do we make disciples. So John 14:15, that's where we're going to start, and we'll skip as we go down. He says, "If you love me, keep my commandments. And I will pray the Father, and he will give you another helper, that he may abide with you forever, the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees him nor knows him. But you know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you." But the main thing here we see is, if you love me, keep my commandments. Let's see if he continues on with that. Skipping a few verses down, he says, "A little while longer, and the world will see me no more, but you will see me, because I live. You will live also. And that day you will know that I am in the Father, and you in me, and I in you. He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him." So there we see again, how do we love God? A few verses down further. "By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples." That's what we started off with, right? Making disciples. Okay? So there, that came back up. And then here's another thing. Here's another word that we've discussed in Sunday school, is what does it mean to glorify God? That's another phrase. I like to throw these things out because we need to think about these words. We throw them out, but we don't know what they mean. We like to use them, but we don't know what the Bible says about them. And that's what we're trying to see. What does God say about loving him? How do we love him? And here's one we see, how we glorify him. "By this my Father is glorified, that you bear fruit, so you will be my disciples. As the Father loved me, I have also loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full." And this was something that Eric talked about way back 9 months ago, whenever we first started this phase of the experiment. So this idea of God's joy being in our lives is incredibly important, but it only comes as we keep his commandments. And that is how we demonstrate our love to him. And then at the end here, he says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends." And we usually stop there with that because it's very dramatic, and we can make a lot of stories about laying down life for another friend. We talk about Christ laying down his life, and that's certainly true. But here, this is what I want to focus on. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Now last week, when Steve gave the announcements, I don't know if y'all remember this, he gave us a little statement of hope there. And that statement of hope was something like this, and forgive me if I don't get it exactly right, but it was a challenge to think. I hope Jesus is your best friend. And that's certainly something we need to be teaching, we need to be looking at. We talk about making disciples, and he does need to be our best friend. And right here we see what it means to be called a friend of Jesus. So I want to look at that a little bit. We've looked at love, and how do we love him? By keeping his commandments. And in that, we see that we can be his disciples by keeping his commandments and loving him. And then we can also be considered his friends. Verse 14 says, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you." Now, along with faith, we looked at Abraham. And Abraham has that title, the friend of God. And we see that talked about in James. It says, "Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar? Do you see that faith was working together with his works? And by works, faith was made perfect. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God." Now, the past few weeks, as I said, Eric's been looking at this idea of faith in Hebrews 11, because that's where we are in our study of Hebrews. And we saw some of those conclusions, and here we see this, this aspect of loving God, making disciples, keeping his commandments, and faith. Obedience is the expression of that faith, and it is also the expression of our love to God. Now, just to conclude this whole thing, we'll finish up back in 1 John with this last passage. And I'll end my little loop here. "Now by this we know that we know him, if we keep his commandments. He who says, 'I know him,' and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him." In the last passage we saw that faith was perfected by our obedience. And here, if we keep his word, the love of God is perfected in us. "By this we know that we are in him. He who says he abides in him ought himself also to walk just as he walked." So how do we get here? Well, back to the loop and back to our purpose, making disciples. Observe, we are to be teaching one another, each other, and others to observe all things that I've commanded you. And that observance is keeping those things, and it's making those things of extreme value. And that's what we're talking about today. These three areas, which there are many more, but these are three areas that we have focused on and chosen to focus on and build a structure on. And so this first one was making disciples. And that's our purpose and that's our goal. Now the means by which we'll do that is through Bible teaching. And that is an area of focus that we try to hold on to tenaciously here. That all of our programs are infused with this idea of Bible teaching. We want to continue that. We want to continue all three of these. These are the essence of what we are. Now, in this idea of Bible teaching, and to do just a review, I was looking at it because as I thought about it, I think about the warnings that come with this idea of Bible teaching, and you think that's kind of crazy, but most of us have been here for a number of years, and we know that there are warnings that come with Bible teaching and downsides that come to it. Now, the upside is eternal life. And the upside is an increasing, growing spiritual maturity and a relationship with Jesus Christ where we become his friend and are known by his friends. That's the big upside. The downsides are what we're going to look at here. And I was looking at those downsides. I was going to just point out a few of them. And I see a lot of them in 2 Timothy when we see this idea of Bible teaching. As I stepped back from that passage, because I was looking at just a few of those instances, I kind of got on my own little loops there, and I started looking up and down the passage. And as I looked from the beginning of 1 Timothy all the way through the fourth chapter of Timothy, it's just one instruction after another. And with that instruction, he gives a warning that has to do with that. And all those instructions have to do with this idea of Bible teaching. And so what I did, instead of going through and reading and putting those passages up, I've kind of summarized those points. And that's what I want to take you through, a real quick little tray summary of the points and instructions and the warnings that Paul gives Timothy here in 2 Timothy. So I actually have the first passage up there because he starts this off with this purpose. And in this phrase, in verse 9, he says, God, who has saved us and called us with a holy calling. Now that's the exact same thing, in essence, that we just saw in Matthew 28. When we talk about making disciples, we need to bring this new life to them, present this new life in Jesus Christ, and then teach them to observe it. And here he says, who has saved us, that's part number one, and then this holy calling, or this calling to holiness is what he's talking about there, which is this teaching to observe. So Paul starts off this little instruction phase to Timothy with that, reminding him of that purpose. So he's right in there in line with our purpose. Now, I'm going to point these instructions out and then give this warning. And again, these are my words, and hopefully, as you see it, you'll be able to recognize the passages that go with some of these. They should be familiar to you because we've looked at these many times over the years. But in verse 13, chapter 1, 13, he says, keep always in the front of your mind, hang on to, and follow the underlying structure of sound words which you have heard from me, the good thing which was committed to you. Now, one of the interesting words in here was, and I don't see him here today, but he walked in. Is Rami here? I don't see Rami. Rami here? Rami's still asleep, okay? Oh, sorry, Rami, you're on tape now. You're going on the World Wide Web and you've slept today. All right. But this word of underlying structure was a fascinating word to me. What it says there literally is the sound pattern of teaching is what it is. And it uses the word pattern there. But as I looked at it, it's a fascinating word that talks of, it's two words, and it's made up of under and sketch. And so it's the under sketching. And if you've ever been around Rami at all, you will not find him. I was going to say he's probably right now with a pen sketching something right now. He listens while he sketches, but he sketches all the time. And that's all he does. If you saw his Awana records, you would see there's literally years of sketches that are on the Awana records because he'll listen to, as he's listening, he sketches things out. And so he does these sketches, and it was fascinating when he was at school to watch the process because he would put stuff up on the web, and he would even put stuff up that was partway in the process so that you could see how he builds these drawings that he does. But he sketches these drawings out and these underlying sketches, and then he'll take them and he'll build on top of them. And then you've got this character that comes out in the end. And it's a great process to see. And that's the similar process that he's talking about here. Hold on to these under-sketchings, okay? Hold on to this foundation, this pattern of teaching. And that's what we're talking about today. We have a pattern of areas of focus that we have established and that we want to continue to build upon. And so we need to hold on to those. And so that's what he's saying here. Hold on, hang on to those sound things. But then Paul says, if you do that, many have turned away from me and the teaching that has gone out. So that's going to be a warning that's going to happen with those things. Skipping down to verse 1 of chapter 2, he says, be strong in the grace of God, and then I want you to transmit and entrust those teachings that I've given to you to faithful and trustworthy people who will also then be able to take on that task of teaching these truths to other faithful people who will in turn, and you see the pattern. But you will have to endure various hardships. It will require discipline and diligence and commitment to be able to do that. And so we need to understand that. If those of you that remember this passage, he gives three pictures there. He talks about the soldier who does not get carried away with the affairs of this world, but concentrates on the things that are enlisted to him. He talks about the hardworking farmer who needs to partake of his crops. And he talks about the athlete who in attempt to win the race, needs to compete according to the rules. And that's the idea here that we have. It's going to require discipline. He says you're going to face hardships as you do this, but you're going to need to have those things in your mind. So we need to set out in our mind ahead of time that these things are necessary and we're going to face them. Then a very familiar passage, 2:15, Study diligently the word, and don't allow yourself to be distracted by the winds of doctrine and the fads of the day. There will be more and more improper teaching, and it will spread. He says it'll spread like cancer there. And it caused this call of godliness, or this call to holiness that we have, to be lessened and lessened and lessened. And so it's important for us to be diligent in the word and to be diligently studying it and to have this focus of Bible teaching. In 2:23, he says, in this process of teaching other people, we need to be gentle. We need to be able to teach. In humility, we need to correct those who are in opposition so that they can grow and wake up to see this purpose God wants to accomplish in their lives. Paul says this in another place in Philippians 3. He says, and even two, you will need to wake up sometime. So he points this out. We're a part of that process. We can be a part of this process in each of our lives and in the lives of other people around us, of hopefully removing that blindness that he talks about that's on the world and that can be on our eyes. But the warning here that he puts right next to that is that the time you live in will become increasingly more and more difficult. Self-seeking will be at the core. He gives a long list of the issues that people will be having as the things that they hold on to, and that we have, our sin natures have a tendency to hold on to, our own. Some of this may look like a good thing. He says that some are going to have an appearance of godliness, but it won't have the power. The core is going to be of that will be personal gain, and that will be the motive. Some will seem to be knowledgeable, but will miss the heart of the matter. He says they will be ever learning, but never coming to the knowledge of the truth. And so we need to be aware of that. We need to understand that that's going to be happening, and that we're going to face that as we take on this process. Then in 3:10, he says, follow the taught word and the example of life that's shown to us, for in it is everything that we need to live to accomplish the purpose of God's calling to a holy life. And if we desire this, and this should be our desire, this is obviously a command that we have over and over again. It's not anything new to us. But if this is our desire, and it's a desire to be accomplished in our life, you will most assuredly suffer persecution, and the times will make it more and more difficult to live this life. So, I don't want to try to be a downer, but we need to be aware of those things. Now, as I was reading this and I was preparing this, I went, but wait a minute, back in 1 John, where we're talking about loving God and keeping His commandments, he said, but my commandments are not burdensome. Okay, well, we don't have a whole big time to go look at that, but let me just remind you of what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4 or 5, somewhere in there. But he says, remember this phrase, but our light and momentary afflictions will yield for us a far more eternal weight of glory. And that's what he's talking about here. We're going to have these afflictions that we're going to have to face. But we need to see them from a proper perspective, from a spiritual perspective. They're only light and momentary, these difficulties here. Because if we're a part of this process in our own lives, and if we're a part of this process in helping other people's, the value is eternal. And it's a weighty thing. And so it's an incredible thing to be a part of this process and to be a part of this body to do this process. And Bible teaching is the essence of that. So we need to be aware of the difficulties that we're going to face as we hold on to this. And we need to remember that. All right. So, there's one more. Gosh, that was finished off really good there. Okay. 4:2, he says, teach the word and its purpose as your life message. And that goes back to what we looked at in Matthew 28, that this needs to be the message of our life. But he says, understand that many will not endure sound teaching, but instead will look for other teachers to say what they want to hear, turning away from the truth and this call to holiness. Well, we look at this idea of Bible teaching. It's an important thing. And as we look at that, and we're aware of that, it's not something that's new to us. It's something that we have observed even. If you've been paying attention, and I hope you have over these years, that as we've held on to this idea of Bible teaching, these things have happened. And we've had to face difficulties as we've gone through, because this is the process. In the first passage we looked at in 1 Peter, he said it's going to be a war. This sin is going to be a struggle and a war against your own soul. And whenever we do Bible teaching, it's one of those things that people walk in the door and they think it's great at the beginning. And it is great. It's great even at the end. But they think it's great at the beginning. But then as we go on, and then at some point in time, it's going to come to that point where it hits us between the eyes with the sin that we have in our own lives. And the easiest thing to do is to walk out the door. And so that's happened a number of times. So we need to be aware that that's going to happen. That doesn't mean that we just let it happen. We're there in the process of helping people be reconciled to God and to build this relationship. So we want to do everything that we can to help this process take place in each of our lives. We need to be evaluating our own lives constantly and the sin that we have to deal with, and to be looking in the mirror to deal with that so that we can be prepared to help this process out in other people's lives. And we need to recognize in humility, he said a minute ago there, in gentleness and humility. And the humility there is that we know that we're that one step away from sin in our own lives. We need to be prepared for that in our own lives and constantly looking at that. So that's some of the dangers of Bible teaching. This third aspect that we've made as a focus here at Manchac Bible Fellowship is this idea of the body. And how we implement that is more descriptive than just throwing some words up. But I'm going to throw some words up to just try to remind us of the general idea of what we do here. First of all, in this idea of the body, unity is the goal. This doesn't mean that we are exactly the same. It doesn't mean that we may disagree on some things. It doesn't mean that we all have to do the exact same thing. It does mean that we have a likeness in purpose, that we're working together for the same purpose, that these areas of focus that we've set out in the past and established, and we hope to continue, are areas that we hold to dearly and that we try to implement and build in each other's lives. And so that's the essence of that idea of unity. And there's so much more that goes along with it. But it has to do with this oneness of God's purpose and seeing that purpose accomplished in each other's lives. The next is leadership through servanthood. This is an example that Christ gives us over and over again. He gave it to right there when he was talking to the disciples about loving him and keeping his commandments. I'm going to keep hitting that, by the way, just so that you make sure you get that. We know the picture. He took off to demonstrate to the disciples as one of his last lessons was this idea of leadership through servanthood. He put the robe on and washed their feet, and we see that picture. In the same way here, we don't work the same way the world works as we come here. It's not a power struggle that produces division. It's a serving one another. It's working together to do those things. And that's the aspect that we have. We have different, from our body, we have given certain people certain areas of responsibility. And we need to respect those and submit to one another in those areas. But that's the key word, submit and yield to one another in those areas for that purpose of that program. And so we're going to submit to one another. We're going to yield to one another, and we need to work through those things. And we need to help each other remember those areas of focus as we make decisions about those things. And then finally, another idea of unity is to seek the best for the entire program. The good of the program comes before our individual and personal wants. It sounds something like Spock said to Kirk. I don't know. Go watch the movies. But it's not that. It's more than that. It's what God teaches us. We need to look at what is best for the entire program. And certainly we want to build and add things to it. But we don't build and add things to it that are going to detract and move us away from that purpose and move us away from this process of godliness in each one of our lives. So we have to balance those things with the resources that we have. We have to be practical and look, we only have so much time. We all know our time is a difficult thing. And we have so much time, we have so much money, we have so many resources. We actually have more resources than we have in the past. We have more classroom space that we're prepared with. But we have those things. We have to look at those limitations and evaluate as we build to do those things. We can't always implement everything when we want to. We may want to, but we can't always implement it. So we have to work through that process and do the best that we possibly can. Another example that we have, just to throw this last one out to remind you, is the board. When the board works, we don't vote on things. We don't vote on things here. We try to work together in a body through the process of communicating to each other. But the board doesn't vote on things. We work on things through common consensus. If the six or seven of us can't agree on something, then there's something wrong. There's something wrong with one of our lives individually or our lives individually, or there's something wrong with whatever is being brought up, the suggestion or problem, and we need to find the best solution we can. Now, does that mean we always have the best possible thing? Not necessarily always, because we're dealing with sin sometimes. We're dealing with difficult situations. But we're doing the best we possibly can with what we have and those resources. And so we don't vote. We don't use the political machine to try to get people to sway to our votes and that kind of a thing. That's not our intention and not our way of mode of operation. So those are some of the aspects of this idea of the body. And then this is something, again, that's very familiar. This is something that I've posted, Susan and I have posted all over our house, is this aspect of divine wisdom. And I just wanted to throw it up there, and I'm not even going to go through it. But it's something, as we work with each other, we need to keep this in mind. And if you want the little definitions, you just let me know, and I've got a little thing that you can post on your mirror. Or Susan started putting them inside the cup. What are those things where you put the dishes? Yeah, okay, that stuff. See, I don't ever do that, so you know, it's not true. I do, but I mean, whatever those cabinets are, that's what you do in a workshop, right? They're cabinets in a workshop, right? Okay, I'm just making sure. Well, I don't do stuff in cupboards. Oh, it doesn't matter. Anyway, this is the wisdom that we want to have: pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. This is the wisdom that we need to be praying for each other for as we work together. Otherwise, we move down to this, what he talks about, the opposite of that, and we're not going to look at all that, but there in verse 1, in James talks about it, where do wars and fights come from among you? That come from your desires that pleasure in war with your members. You ask, but you ask amiss. And it's so easy for us to do that, and so easy for us to fall into that. So we need that wisdom in each of our lives as we work in our own lives and as we work together in this. So that's an important part of this process of working together as a body. Now, where are we? Well, in this phase, there's two parts to this that I want to talk about. One, I want to talk about briefly because, quite honestly, it's uncomfortable for me to talk about. So I'll just talk about it. So for 9 months, we've been involved in this new phase of the experiment here. And I just want to briefly look at that, and then I want to really focus on how we can move forward as a body. But just to give you a little bit of an update of where we are, because the board's going to be talking and presenting a little bit of a solution tonight for this in the annual meeting. I wanted to just give you a little bit of an idea of where Eric and I are in the process. As you know, we both have full-time jobs, and we took on this additional responsibilities. And with hope, we will hopefully be able to work out these solutions. And I said hope, right? And it wasn't, maybe some of it was wishful hope, I don't know. But we have found struggles with time. Now, we don't want to sound like whiners because everybody has struggle with time. But part of the thing is it takes time. It takes time to prepare. And so we're working on some of those solutions. We're working on trying to deal with that. We just want you to make you aware of it because it is something that we're having a difficulty with. It's not impossible. It's not something that we can't overcome. But it is, we're going to have to work on solutions for that. Because it is having an effect. The other day, I was talking about it, and I don't know if we were talking about it together as a board or if it was just Steve and I, but Steve gave the nice example. I'll give you the nice example, and then I'll give you my feeling example. Feeling? Okay. Steve said, it's like you're in a boat and you're taking on water and you can't get it out faster than it comes in. My example was more like it's chopping off limbs, and how many limbs can you chop off? It's a little bit more graphic, till you don't have life, okay? So it's probably because that's the way I feel about it sometimes. But I'm not trying to be a martyr or anything like that. That's not what we're trying to do. But there has been an effect on having to take on some of these responsibilities and the time to be able to give to the other responsibilities that we have, our family, the other responsibilities that we're working on, because we have to learn some new things and new processes. And so part of it is just learning. Part of it is dealing with those aspects. And our wives have both taken on a lot of extra work in these areas. And so we're both very grateful to the things that they've done, and we're appreciative of that in various ways. And so we just wanted to give you an idea of that. We have been working on some solutions for that. The board has one part of that they're going to present more tonight with a little bit of an aspect to that. So we just wanted to give you that. So I spent more time than I wanted to on that. Now, where we are, and as a body, what I think we need to be focusing on as we take the next steps forward in this. 2 Timothy 2:2, we've already looked at it tonight. And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. When I think about what we have here, I think about the years of what we've been given, the solid teaching. We have been given a great deal. We have a lot to be thankful for. We have a lot that we need to realize that has been dispensed to us as far as solid Bible teaching. And now we get to continue that process. That's the challenge that we have before us, is to continue these areas of focus and continue that process, and to take that information and that foundation that's been laid, and to build on that process. So this is what we want to. This is what we want to do. We've had more than one family. We've had the McDonald's, Bruce and Bev, and Clyde and Bev White, and they've helped build a lot here at this church. And so we need to recognize that, and look at what they've provided for us, what we have, and now what we can do with that. Because we're in this part of this process now. We're the faithful men that these things have been committed to. And we have the privilege and the opportunity to be able to teach others these same things. And so that's what we want to look at. We want to look at trying to build that into our lives. It's not that we haven't been doing that. We've been working in this process too. So I'm not trying to say that we've just been passive members. I don't mean that at all. But what I do mean is that we need to look at it that way. We need to see how can we build those things into our lives. And I think we have a lot of opportunities to be able to do those things and to become better teachers, to look at how we can prepare for other people that can come and be a part of this body so that we can be a part of the process of showing them and helping this process in their lives. And so that's what I want us to look at as we look forward. It's not necessarily going to be easy. As I've said before, if we hold on to these things and these principles, especially Bible teaching, then we're going to have difficulties that we're going to have to face as people come in. And so we need to be prepared for that, and we need to recognize that it's there and that challenge that's before us. But it is a challenge, and it is an opportunity. There's no other place that I would rather be. There's no other things that I would rather be focusing on. That's why Susan and I are here. I know that's why Eric and Colleen are here. And I know that's why you're still here. We want to focus on these things. We want to continue to build these things in each other's lives and continue to build them in other people's lives as we affect them. So that's some of the challenge there. As we look at some of these steps, I'll try to give just a few brief points of some of the things that we've been working on and what we'd like to try to do to try to help take those steps together. The first one is just remembering Ephesians 4 tells us that part of the body, part of the purpose of the body is equipping each other, equipping one another for the work of the ministry, to build the body, to become like Christ, so that we're not tossed back and forth by the fads or the winds of doctrine. And one of the things that I've already said is that we've been given a great deal of information over the years. We have a lot of that recorded so that we can use to continue to refresh with. But another thing that we have that we'd like to try to do is to help each other build this process of study and personal preparation for teaching. And so we've already presented this to most everybody, and if you haven't heard it, now you'll be hearing it for the first time, but some of this is new. We want to provide at least some Bible software to each family. And beyond that, which I think most families here have, what we want to try to do is we want to try over the next months, year, on Sunday evenings, we want to add an opportunity to train in that. And not just that software, but to train in different areas of preparing to teach, other types of tools that can be used, principles that we need to have as we prepare to teach. And so periodically, it's not going to be every Sunday, but periodically on Sunday evenings, we're going to have some training sessions of how to use these tools effectively and how to prepare and build those things. We have opportunities here to be able to practice teaching. Ladies' Bible study is a great opportunity to be able to teach. The adult Sunday school class is a great opportunity to practice these things and to build these things with one another. We all know we're all going to be working together on it. And so it's a great opportunity to help each other grow and prepare for that as we move ahead. So that's one area. Another thing that is extremely important to me in this area of teaching too is getting the walkthrough, I hate to say done, but to get it usable is the word that I want to say. And so we've discussed this on the board, and what we're going to be trying to do is this summer, I'm going to shut my door and I'm going to just stick my nose on the screen and do everything I can starting in June to get those lessons in a usable form. I know there's no way in that time to be able to get it completely finished because we have all these grandiose and great ideas that we want to add to it that we've discussed before. But we can get it to a place where it can be distributed and it can be usable. And so I would ask for your prayers. There actually may be opportunities to help during that time, and I'll try to make those available to do some of that help. Because as we do it, I'm going to need a few people to just look through the lessons on different DVDs and watch the whole lesson to make sure that something's not messed up, okay, in the process. It happens when you're editing video and things like that. So I'll need some of those kinds of things. And so if you could think about a willingness to look at that, especially all kinds of different TVs and recorders, just to see if they work so that we have the compatibility with all that stuff too. There's just all kinds of little detail-y things that have to happen. And so that's part of the process. And our hope is to be able by midsummer to have it in a usable form. We have a good chunk of it rough cut, but we have to go back and add some things to it to get that done. So that's another thing that we want to try to focus on. And then another area that you probably haven't seen a whole lot, but there's been a lot of work done on the board, is promoting and trying to get our name out there. And it's difficult when we're in this little barn down here, down Loudon Lane, with no place to get our name out. We can't even put a big sign up, you know, and see it. So we've been working to try to do that since even before this phase of the experiment. We were working on some things. Some of the things haven't worked out, which is probably a good thing. You know, you work on a plan and it doesn't work out, and you realize in hindsight, hey, that was a good thing because something else worked out in a better way. God knows much more about how to handle these things. But we diligently have been trying to work on things, even little things, just preparing new materials and working on new materials, trying to get things sent to people. As you know, we've changed the website. And since since last April, I think, I've been collecting all the people that have actually walked through the doors, and I think with the exception of two people, everybody's walked through the doors because they've seen us on the website. And that was a cool process. It wasn't just the new website, because you get on the website, and that's okay, good deal, big deal, but you got to get the website to people's screen somehow. How do you get them there? And so so that was part of the problem, is because whenever we do a search for churches in Austin, we didn't come up very high, and who knows where Manchac is? You can't pronounce it anyway. So nobody knows how to pronounce it. So Manchac has no value whatsoever as far as, you know, people looking for a church. So there was a lot of stuff that went into that. And so with the help of, and suggestions of the board, we got some things in. And then this was cool how it worked out, because we got those things in and we got it posted. And I mean, you know, you don't know how this stuff works out. But fortunately, right after we posted it, the search engines do their spidering, where they go off periodically and check your websites and re-update their indexes or whatever it is they do, their fancy schmancy stuff to get people to come up. And we got that stuff on there, and now when we do a South Austin search, you know, we come up pretty high. And so that was kind of cool how that worked out, and that was through different suggestions that the board had, that we implemented some of those things and tried them, and we didn't have to fork over any money to do that. We looked at advertising on the web to do it too, and so we didn't have to do that. One of the big struggles we have is, as you know, over the years, our sign has been taken away from us down there. And so the best option we've found so far is our little bitty yellow sign at the end of the midst of all the other signs on the end of 1626, which, you know, you do the best you can. I mean, it's not super effective, but at least it's here, you know, in the vicinity. And so we've got that, and I think we've had one family come because of that. That's kind of cool. So that's one thing. But one thing that you don't know that we're working on, and hopefully it will continue to work out, it seems to be working out, is that we will probably be able to get a sign again back at the end of this road. And so we're working on with Mr. Moreland down here with the chainsaw man to work on a deal with that. And so hopefully that will work out. But he's agreed to do some things. He's going to be partially build the sign, and then we're going to add a sign that's going to hang on to it. It may take a little while to do that because he's in no big hurry. And we haven't been either because we've had to work on other things. But we're working on that process and trying to move forward with that. So that's another good thing that hopefully will come to fruition. So those are some of the things. We've worked on, like I said, we've worked on some other materials, and we want to work on some more. So those are some of the areas that we've looked at. And that's what I want to close on tonight. We're just going to look at the budget and remember these things. And so I hope you'll attend tonight and look at that, so you'll be aware of that. The time for a potluck is great. And I don't think the annual meeting, the going over the budget, we don't anticipate it being a very long one. So we'll look at those things. But this is the idea to leave with, and that this is what we want to try to accomplish as we continue to move forward. That as we look at God's word, we want to look at his commands and look at the word that he's given us and the word that we've been taught. And we want to continue to learn it, to dig into it. We want to continue to live it. And then we want to learn how to better teach it and present it to other people. Let's all pray today. Father, thank you. Thank you for each other. Thank you for your word. Thank you for your desire for us. And we ask that you give us wisdom to be able to move forward here with the things that you want to see done. We may be able to see clearly that those things. That we may, as we have always tried to do, base our actions and our decisions on your word by faith. So we ask for your wisdom, that we may understand your desires and your purposes, and not seek to accomplish our own purposes, but seek to accomplish your purpose in our lives and in the lives of people around us. And we ask for courage to be able to take on this challenge and to continue building on the principles that you've shown us and that you've shown us through other men and women. Thank you for your love for us, and thank you for your grace. In your son's name, amen.